Well, good morning, and thank you all. It is a true pleasure to be here today. I'm honored by the invitation, and want to really acknowledge Dave's thinking about this. Please note that I've made a slight modification in the title of my presentation to focus on the situation in the United States with a very brief mention of the global situation. I will review recent trends and growing body of evidence which shows how social determinants influence present tuberculosis incidence in our country. Of course, before we do anything else, I need to tell you that I have no disclosures to report. In the book entitled The White Plague, first published in 1952, René and Jean Dubois acknowledged that tuberculosis is a social disease and admonished us that social and economic factors needed to be considered as much as the pathophysiologic aspects of this disease. This next slide, I'm just going to gloss over because you just heard from Dr. Reeves that in the United States we have an agreed upon plan to eliminate tuberculosis defined as a case per million. We, however, had a big setback in tuberculosis control in our country. There was an unprecedented resurgence which took place between 1985 and 92, with 52,000 excess cases that we calculate should have never occurred had the original trends continued. You've also heard about the Institute of Medicine and their recommendations. And now to add insult to injury, we've had to respond to the newly described occurrence of extensively drug-resistant tuberculosis. So coming back to the situation in our country, following more than three decades of a steady decline in trends, these came to a screeching halt in 1984. And between 1985 and 92, there was a 20% increase in the incidence. The associated risk factors are listed under the graph. And as you can see, the trend was only reversed after big time mobilization of new resources, leading to subsequent reductions totaling almost 50% in our country over the next 17 years. You're going to see a series of graphs that are very similar, loaded with data, and I just want to highlight a few points. Decreases have been seen in all age groups, but the highest rates occur in the over 65 age group. You will notice that these TB is a disease of young adults. The rates in the 45 to 64 and 25 to 44 year olds have now come down to 4.3 and 4.7 respectively, while it's been 5.8 per 100,000 in the older than 55. I told you that HIV was associated with a resurgence. We've done quite well as a result of implementing DOT, and I need to give credit to the advent of highly active antiretroviral therapy. HIV co-infection has decreased to almost a third of its prevalence in 1993 among the 15 to 44 age group, from 29 to 10. When you look at who got tuberculosis and was reported with tuberculosis last year in our country, 84% were in non-white, making this clearly a disease of racial and ethnic minorities. When you look at rates by race ethnicity, relying on census data, you see that good news on one hand is that rates have decreased in all racial and ethnic groups. However, disparities have remained over time. The highest rates in Asian Pacific Islanders in 93 were 41.2. They're down to 23. In blacks, non-Hispanic blacks in 1993, they were 28.5. They're now down to 7.6. Contrast that against the rates seen in non-Hispanic whites, which went from 3.6 in 93 to 0.9. in 2009. You also heard from Dr. Reeves what's been happening in Denver. This is what has happened in the rest of the country. Foreign-born persons now account for 70% of cases in 2009. And as you see, the blue graph shows the decreasing number of tuberculosis in U.S.-born persons, while the number in the foreign-born has remained relatively stable, thus accounting for that higher proportion of tuberculosis. Again, using census-derived denominator data, you can see that the rates in the foreign-born in 1993 were 34 per 100,000, down to 19 per 100,000 in 2009, compared against 7 per 100,000 in 93 for the U.S.-born, down to 2 per 100,000. However, if you look at the risk ratio in 1993, it was almost 5. That risk ratio has almost doubled to 9.5 in 2009. In 2009, almost one-fourth of all foreign-born TB cases originated from Mexico. Not surprisingly, we share an almost 2,000-mile border with this country. But as you see, 12% from Philippines, 8% from India, and another 8% from Vietnam, 5% from China, 3% from Guatemala, 3% originated from Haiti. And the rest of the pie chart collapses all other countries, but no single country was a birthplace for more than 1 to 2% of reported TB cases in our country. The other thing we have seen is that we've successfully decreased the number of persons with primary multi-drug resistant tuberculosis. And here you see the graph showing U.S. and foreign-born persons. MDR, as I told you, was a driver of the resurgence. And early on, the percent MDR was similar among foreign-born and U.S.-born in 1993. And while this has decreased, in 2009, the percent of multidrug-resistant TB in the foreign-born was almost six times that seen in the U.S.-born population. All this is not surprising because the global situation is reflected right here in the United States. According to the World Health Organization, in 2008, more than 9 million cases were estimated to occur. 1.8 million persons died of tuberculosis, which means that about 4,500 persons die every day of tuberculosis. And I think that Carol's presentation entitled Where's the Outrage is a very appropriate one, because I would invite you to think of how many other things we allow to occur and not do much about in terms of the death toll exacted by tuberculosis. You'll see here that 1.4 million persons, or 15% of these estimated cases, had HIV-associated tuberculosis, and 440,000 persons had multidrug-resistant tuberculosis with unacceptably high number of deaths. Globally, just as we will see for the United States, the most vulnerable carry the burden of tuberculosis. And that includes women, migrant workers, prisoners, minorities, refugees. And then the comorbidities associated with tuberculosis also prey on the poor. Now let's come back to the situation in our country. Suzanne Marks and our team has estimated the funding per tuberculosis case in the United States adjusted to $1,990. And as you see, back in 1982, we were spending $345 per case. That slowly grew to almost $1,000 per case in 1991. And with the resurgence and the concern, the new resources became available by 1993, growing to $3,358 per case, peaking in the year 2000 at $5,800, but stagnating at the cost per case in 2009, it was $5,102. This reality makes it difficult to achieve elimination, given that, as you will see in the subsequent slides, the remaining populations are increasingly hard to reach. It is interesting to notice that at the same time that these resources have stagnated, we've observed a similar stagnation in the rate of decline of tuberculosis. between the year 2000 and 2008, the annual percent change or reduction was down to 3.8 compared to the 7.3 annual percent change that occurred between the year 1993 and the year 2000. Individual risk factors associated with disparities in tuberculosis have been recently reported on, and at the bottom you see the publication. And when you look at the rate ratios, please pay attention to the fact that if HIV infected, there's a 25-time higher rate of tuberculosis compared to non-HIV infected. If foreign-born, the rate is 10 times higher. If non-Hispanic black, it's 9 times higher than in non-Hispanic whites. You can see that it's 8 times higher in Hispanics, 24 times higher in Asian, and 21 times higher in Native Hawaiian and Pacific Islanders. In addition, we see a rate ratio of 2 for men compared with women, persons age over 45 compared to those who are younger, and for those who use alcohol. Very importantly, we have seen that homelessness accounts for a disparity rate ratio ranging from 5 to 8 times when compared with non-homeless populations. Incarceration disparity rate ratio is 4 times compared to people who have not been incarcerated. So the list of factors associated with tuberculosis is too long, in my opinion. And I hope I've convinced you that the populations listed here experience TB disparities and inequities in ways that we shouldn't be accepting in our country in this day and age. I'm also going to share with you an earlier publication by Mike Cantwell and colleagues that looked at TB between 1987 and 1993 using census-derived socioeconomic status indicators, and we see that consistently TB rates are highest for persons who have the indicators of crowding, poverty, lower income, unemployment, and lower education. To add insult to injury, very often these conditions don't occur by themselves. There is a propensity to see an overlap or coexistence of risk factors in the populations, which results in greater inequities. I'll just give you a couple or three examples coming up. If you look at HIV-infected patients in the United States in 2006, 84% were either black or Hispanic. When we look at homeless patients occurring or reported in our country between 94 and 2003, 45% were black, 20% Hispanic, 34% had HIV infection, 54% had a history of alcohol abuse, and as you can see, the use of non-injection and injection drugs is also relatively common. So this is all based on cases of tuberculosis reported in our country. But we shouldn't forget that in addition to incident tuberculosis, there's a relatively large pool of persons with latent tuberculosis infection in our country, last estimated by the NHANES survey conducted between 1999 and the year 2000. We estimate that in the United States, there's between 9 and 14 million persons with latent tuberculosis. And again, as you see, the rate of infection in foreign-born was 10 times higher than for the U.S.-born. The rate for non-Hispanic blacks was 3.7 times higher than in non-Hispanic whites. And for persons whose income was lower than the cost of living, defined here as the poverty index of less than 1, they had almost twice the rate of tuberculosis infection. So in summary, despite the remarkable decreases in tuberculosis incidence trends over the last 17 years, social determinants now highly correlate with the occurrence of tuberculosis. The factors associated with TB disparities in our country include homelessness, substance abuse, incarceration, unemployment, HIV, race ethnicity, and birthplace. And as I've shown, overlapping disparities augment these inequities. I also shared with you the studies that have associated TB rates with social determinants that are not routinely collected through surveillance information. And the bottom line is we need the political commitment and mobilization resources and ability of health systems to provide services in socioeconomic context of the TB patients who we're now seeing in this country if we are to achieve elimination. In closing, I would like to acknowledge the work done by the frontline persons in the TB programs throughout our country, the folks in the CDC's Division of the Surveillance Team, Outbreak Investigation Team, and the WHO Stop TB Department. Mario Raviglione facilitated a couple of slides that I use here. Thanks again for your time. Questions? If there are any questions or comments, I'd be happy to try to answer. Please. Yes, absolutely. So the question was, given the association between HIV and tuberculosis, should we not intensify the approach used by HIV programs and TB programs to coordinate, if I could paraphrase your comment and question? The answer is very simply stated, yes. Any person who works in an HIV program should feel comfortable with routinely offering the evaluation for TB. Anyone who has evidence of latent tuberculosis deserves to be placed on treatment for that latent tuberculosis given the high risk of disease. And conversely, in the TB clinics, we need to screen for HIV infection so that we can manage these patients accordingly. I didn't get into it, but there are some challenges with the co-management of these diseases when you look at drug-drug interactions, paradoxical reactions, and the last thing you need is to have a patient who thinks you're giving them drugs to make them better but feel worse because of the drugs that they're using for both diseases. Bill Berman has worked in this area and developed some guidelines for this purpose, but absolutely, and globally, especially when you go to places like Africa, where TB is driven by HIV, there's a need to do a better job at potentially integrating services for the individuals when they show up. And in fact, that's what the World Health Organization pretty much recommends. Any other questions or comments? Yes. Thank you. So the question is, in terms of symptoms for tuberculosis, how often do we see pulmonary versus extrapulmonary? In the United States, 77% of people with tuberculosis have pulmonary disease. Extrapulmonary tuberculosis tends to be more common persons with HIV infection and in children. They tend to have meningitis disseminated disease. And very often you'll have both forms present. Even those who have extrapulmonary will occasionally have pulmonary involvement. But it's not uncommon for persons with underlying immune deficiency to present with lymph nodes that have tuberculosis. There's a hand. Yes. Thank you. You must have seen the two slides that I had to take out because of the time limitation. absolutely. The question is, if I could speak to what's happening between the United States and Mexico. The challenge there is that we have a border through which millions of persons cross on a daily basis. And what we've established as a goal is to ensure the continuity of care no matter where the diagnosis is made and no matter where persons move to. So the initial projects that we've started. In fact, along the border area, there are a series of sister city projects that have been implemented in Texas and California, as well as Arizona. And we're working with the Mexican TB program authorities to make sure that we have the ability to provide a toll-free telephone for persons who, once they cross the border, they could say, I had TB, I was being managed in Denver. Here's a number where you can call to get the information. Similarly, for persons moving northbound, we've relied on two programs. One's called Cure TB and the other one TBNet to accomplish this. There's quite a bit of more work to be done. And the most recent challenge that I was hearing from Commissioner Lakey in Texas is that the violence in the border towns in Mexico is such that it's limiting our ability to send outreach workers at a time when we used to very comfortably send them across the border to link up with practitioners on the other side. One last question. Deb, do I pick you or the person in front of you? Okay.
I'm from Chicago and work in the TB program, and we've seen a rise in patients that go to private providers. And when we look at our MCIT measures and the indicators, we go to some town measures. So, as you know, putting funds for local TB programs happens, how can this be? And I think the CDC has started putting some recommendations, but how we manage those folks that go to private providers, especially with
so just for the sake of those who might have not heard, the question is the growing role that private providers are having in identifying and managing persons with tuberculosis, and she's relating the experience in Chicago. That is, in fact, one of the areas we anticipate is going to be an increasing challenge for public health department run TB programs is the Affordable Care Act. People think that with this panacea, all these patients are going to be cared for by federally designated health centers or elsewhere by private providers because now they can get remunerated. But you and I know that the problem and the paradox of tuberculosis is that as cases go down, proficiency is lost. And we will need to provide access to expertise in different settings, whether it's on a regional basis, and in fact, CDC funds four regional training medical consultation centers to cover the country. But, you know, in my opinion, we need to work well with these providers and whenever possible, use them to extend the care and then have the health department monitor the outcomes of interest. The one area that I don't think that anyone's gonna do, and that's going to fall through the cracks if we don't pay attention to it, is community-based contact investigations. No health clinic is going to be sending people out to identify exposed cohorts who then need to be tested and evaluated. And by the way, when we do that, we find about 2% additional TB cases. So it's a great way to find other people with TB in addition to people with latent tuberculosis. But thanks for the question. Deb, I'll chat with you for your question later on. Thank you.